Hello! Welcome to The Here and Now, the brand new podcast hosted by myself, Liv Cowell. We're going to look at the relationship between the music industry and socio-political issues and themes covering politics, race, gender, sexuality, mental health and money, looking at how they shape the music industry, how they continue to influence it, and how it impacts on all the people working behind the scenes. As part of this podcast, I've been able to speak with some really interesting people from all corners of the industry. Artists, producers, record labels and other people. They're going to be coming and speaking to you as well as guests on this podcast as the episodes go on. So today we're going to kick off with politics itself. It's going to sound hefty, but I promise it's going to be nice and light, easy to understand. We're going to look at this episode at how the music industry is impacted by politics. We're going to bravely delve into big bad Brexit. I know, I'm sorry, but it is important. And we're also going to look at how music can be a reaction to politics, looking at some of the big genres, albums and artists that have come about because of something that's happened in politics, or where they're using their platform to speak about something that they think is important. So, I hope you're excited. Let's get started. All right. I can frankly barely keep up with Brexit. Honestly, I usually don't even bother trying. It changes that often. But for all of you gig goers and festival lovers, this is something that I think you'll be particularly interested to know more about. The main question that I'm asking today is, what impact will Brexit have on EU tours and UK festivals? Very shortly, I will be introducing my wonderful guests for this week. Lizzie Ball and Jessie Murphy are two fantastic musicians who very kindly joined me to talk more about what impact Brexit will have directly on the music industry here in the UK, as well as over in the EU.
But, you know, so many brilliant UK bands actually found their audiences in Europe before they found them in England.
They did.
You know, like Lizzie was saying, that grassroots way, and we're just cutting that off at the source, really.
So excited to bring that interview to you in just a few moments' time. But before they join us, let's have a quick rundown of what's happened and, frankly, what it all means. So it's probably important to note that we are still, unfortunately, as I'm sure you've noticed, in the middle of a global pandemic. COVID-19 has had a huge impact on the music industry in the UK and on the EU because the live sector has completely shut down. We're going to get into the details of that and what that can mean for artists in the episode on money later in this series. But before COVID even struck, and before we even had this new deal for Brexit, a survey showed that 71% of musicians had already admitted to losing work in the EU. And that covers everything from orchestras to rock bands. It's not just the big pop stars, it's everything, all the musicians. So fundamentally, we can see that even before this new deal was arranged and agreed upon, even just the concept of Brexit made it less desirable for the EU to hire and book musicians from the UK. Now, this new deal has set out the rules for travel. We're going to get into that in a second, but it will mean that anybody looking to come and spend time in the EU from the UK for business, and that includes artists and crews that are coming to tour, they will now need specific visas for each country that they visit. This wasn't obviously the case before, and it now creates a lot of difficulties logistically and financially. But our lovely Prime Minister doesn't seem to think that that's going to be a problem at all. He doesn't seem to think there's going to be any new issues that will arise. This is a quick clip from his interview with Laura Kuensberg when she told him exactly what trouble it will bring for the music industry.
How can you justify your claim that somehow people will be able to do more business with the European Union?
Because we'll be able to do things differently here, support our businesses, whilst not having any barriers to trade with the EU.
But Prime Minister, that's just factually not the case. There will be some new barriers. If you're a musician who wants to go and perform in some European countries, you'll have to get a work permit, which you don't now. It's not true that there will not be more barriers.
Big up Laura for standing up for the music industry. To give you a rough idea of the costs that bands and crews are now looking at to go into the EU, this includes each individual specific visa for the countries, alongside paying all the added taxes and transport costs for shifting equipment and merchandise across all the borders. It will be like the cost of touring the US, but only going as far as across the channel. They're basically looking at about £45,000 for a 10-date tour across 5 countries. Now that figure accounts for roughly 4 in a band, 3 in crew, and paying about £7,500 per person for visas and travel and God knows what else. As for EU artists coming here, wanting to tour the UK or appear at our festivals, if you read the official policy statement that outlines the new immigration system, by the way, would not recommend, it's very long, paragraph 25 says that artists, entertainers and musicians can perform at events and take part in competitions for up to 6 months. I don't know if that means they need a visa for 6 months or they can be here for 6 months without a visa, not sure. It says they can also receive payment for appearances at certain festivals for up to a month without the need for a formal sponsorship or a work visa. So it's not great, but at least it kind of covers it. It just doesn't feel very clear. I don't really know. So that's you basically up to speed now. That's a rough situation that we're looking at in terms of the music industry. Because of the new immigration rules set out by the Brexit agreement, there is much more to go into detail with. And we're going to uncover a couple more problems that are arising now in my interview with my lovely guests this week. I'm delighted to welcome onto the podcast Lizzie Ball and Jessie Murphy. Both are fantastic musicians playing the violin. Lizzie, as just one example, was the orchestra leader for the last tour of the Hugh Jackman show in the EU. Jessie does a lot of work with ELO and their orchestra and all of their tours. As freelance musicians, they are fully aware of how much hard work goes into the music industry by each individual musician, both do recording work alongside all of their tours. In fact, this beautiful piece of music that you can hear just now is by Lizzie herself. It's a track called Libertango, and you can find that on Spotify. Jessie was also the founder of the Let Music Live movement. Lizzie was part of that pretty much from the get-go as well. That was a big movement that took place in London in October, and she's going to tell us all about it now. So enough of me, let's bring them in. It is my absolute pleasure to welcome Lizzie Ball and Jessie Murphy onto the Here and Now.
This whole past year has already given the music industry such a tough time, and now to look at a possibility of the New Deal giving us an even harder time is not great timing.
And it took us a really long time to even reach this deal. You know, before this, it was just a lot of debates and changes that I didn't fully understand. I think that the news was, it was changing so often, we didn't really know what to expect. But there was talk for a long time since about February last year when the system was announced for the new immigration to replace the free movement. And we weren't sure how clear that was going to become. And so upon finally agreeing on a deal in December, how do you guys feel as musicians about the new travel and immigration system that's been agreed upon?
It seems clear that there's not a lot that we do know, except that unfortunately, you know, what we had hoped for, which was that we would be included in a visa-free work permit situation for international touring, that hasn't happened. And that's all that we do know. And I think it's important to mention that although, you know, some of the EU countries are obviously offering, you know, 90-day, you know, visa-free travel, this really doesn't relate to work travel. And it just seems that we have been left off that list of industries that are, you know, looking to understand, you know, we're trying to understand, well, where does that leave us? And at the moment, we literally don't know. It's just still a huge question mark.
Yeah. Jess, do you feel the same way?
Yeah, absolutely. Like Lizzie said, we do know that, for example, telecoms and architecture, there's a whole list of professions that have been included as professions where you would be allowed to travel and to work without restriction. And cultural and creative workers aren't on that list at present. So that's just a huge question mark, like Lizzie said. And essentially, what we're looking at the moment is a situation where we possibly will have to get a different visa for every single country and a carnet for our instruments or whatever equipment we're bringing for every single country. And it might be a different visa to pay for every single one as it stands, which is basically an incredibly huge impediment to any kind of touring or work.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up actually, because it's a logistical nightmare, but it's also draining financially on the prospects of touring, like you said. And the big fears is that this will impact mostly on under-established artists or people that are trying to get hired up in the industry, who maybe can't afford all these different visa costs for the specific requirements of each individual country that they visit. And that's not even accounting for all the different transportation costs and the taxes and shipping for equipment and merchandise. There's so much to consider. Lizzie, how realistic is it that these performers and their crews will be able to progress as they normally would?
Well, this is it, and this is exactly the point, is it can be really expected that it's going to be felt so intensely by the grassroots and the emerging artists, of which, you know, often, you know, a tour for those artists is crucial to building their fan base, to building their support, to building their profile. And it's just incredibly sad that that could end up being completely wiped out. You know, I think some of those artists, you know, they would not be able to afford to tour because budgets at that level are very, very strict as it is. And then I think even with the sort of higher level, slightly more established artists, there's still, you know, a huge amount of consideration and cost involved. And there's definitely a worry that it may well be that certain artists just simply won't be able to tour abroad anymore, which, you know, in the EU anymore, which would just be devastating as a cultural impact in general, you know?
Yeah, definitely. So how do you think, what could we be looking at in the coming years if this indeed stays as it will? You know, it doesn't look like it'll change much. If it stays the way that it's been agreed upon just now in terms of needing visas and needing different requirements, what kind of impact could that have on the UK industry as a whole in terms of the music landscape? Jess, I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
Well, in its essence, what it would do is it would make all creative professionals less employable.
Yeah.
You know, if you're, say, a French band who want to tour and you might have previously worked with a string quartet that toured with you, it used to be from the UK, would you do that? Would you continue to work with those people? Or would you think, hang on, let's get a quartet who are based in France, and we only need, if we want to tour Europe, we can do that fine. If we want to go to the UK, yes, we'll need to get a visa. Or do we continue working with the quartet from the UK and get 27 different visas? You know, it's just a no-brainer, isn't it? Let alone, that's not even taking into consideration all the other stuff. And you know, whatever sector of the creative industry you work in, if you're an amazing opera set designer or something who's really established, yeah, I'm sure you'll still get to go to Prague and work on something. But if you're someone who's at the beginning of their career, mm-hmm. and you know that the people who the opera house in Prague need to pay loads of extra money to employ you, why would they do that, really? You know, so I think at its bleakest, that is, it will just result in us being much less employable, because we are freelancers after all. We're not employed a few people are employed obviously by an opera house or by an orchestra or whatever, but in most professionals in creative industries are freelance, and so we need to be employed again and again and again by different people. And at the end of the day, if being a British person comes with a huge extra cost whenever you travel, that's just disastrous for us.
Absolutely, yeah. And it seems like we've seen plenty example this past year of the government's poor attitude towards the arts. You know, the COVID pandemic has brought a lot of that to light, I think. You know, there was a lot of talk about sending creatives, especially freelancers, to go and retrain. And obviously that sparked a huge, huge outrage. Yeah. And you were both involved. Jess, I believe you even founded the Let Music Live movement that started off in London. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, well, basically, Lizzie was involved from almost day one, I think. But a bit, essentially, I had the idea of more the compulsion to stand outside the House of Parliament and play something at them.
Yeah.
until we could say, look, we're here still, and this is a worthwhile profession. Listen, it's something good, and it's something that, you know, we should not be just told to retrain and give up on, you know. And I think also it became an argument a little bit about retraining, but actually everybody I know is already doing other jobs.
Yeah.
It's not really about a lack of willingness to do that. The point was we were trying to say we are worthwhile, and it's a worthwhile thing to do, and we will be part of the recovery when it comes. And so why just abandon this entire and this is an entire sector, as it were, especially as, you know, the government is getting behind other sectors that actually bring less revenue, if you want to talk about it in those terms. Mm-hmm. and this is actually almost just another example of that, where basically where the government has worked really hard to make sure that certain industries can continue to work in the EU. People who do a lot of import and export businesses, they've got entire, you know, think tanks devoted to helping people through that transition. Like with the, and I was only listening yesterday to someone who's, you know, going to have huge problems with his business because it exports to Northern Ireland regularly. But, you know, he had several people from the government helping him with the transition of that. And that's, you know, entirely as it should be. But again, as a really good example, I think, is maybe Eat Out to Help Out was in order to keep that restaurant industry afloat. Mm-hmm. And I think often the argument with creative industries is perhaps it's not, you know, a matter of life and death, but then neither is the restaurant business, neither is hairdressing, you know, and neither is import and export of goods, you know. And so the government is making efforts to keep industries going and just try and help them figure out how to survive. And we don't, yet again, the culture and creative industry seem to be left out of this.
Yeah.
And so it's not really asking for money as such, it's more asking for focus and attention on how to get us to a place where we actually can look at coming back and surviving, you know?
And what do you think would be the easiest or the most straightforward way to do that? I'm not saying it would be easy, but the most obvious route to get the music industry back up to where it was. Obviously, this is all hypothetical in terms of restrictions and safety and whatnot, but is there more that we could be doing? Is there more the government could be doing to support the music industry, Lizzie?
Well, I think with the EU agreement, simple. I think just a one-stop, you know, kind of visa work permit that would allow professions like ours that have to make multiple stops in a month. You know, for example, a tour could take in, you know, more than 5 to 10 different countries. And so I think having some kind of simple system that allows for professions like ours to do that would be a great start. I think in terms of here in the UK, as Jess said, you know, we're not asking for handouts, we're asking for our profession to be supported so we can get back to work. And I do believe, as Jess said, that there have been many other examples of them doing that with other industries, but I still feel with the music industry, it seems to always feel as though we're bottom of the agenda. And yet, you know, we bring such joy and the industry and the incredible talent of creatives that are part of, you know, the creative industries as a whole, not obviously not just the music industry, are so vital to people's mental health. And I think, frankly, you know, the government, you know, should recognise that and make it more of a priority, because I think after this pandemic, the next pandemic is going to be a mental health one, because people are really struggling. And creative industries have always naturally been helpful in those situations, you know, to uplift people.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think partly it's a misunderstanding of what it is to do these things, do anything creative as a job. Yeah. I think part of it is that perhaps there's an image of it being something that you enter sort of, like, especially with classical music, just as an example, you enter sort of a gilded world where, say, you get into the Royal Academy of Music, you then graduate and you go into an orchestra and you play in beautiful big halls, and then that's sort of that. Or perhaps if you're a pop musician, they think that you're either a busker or you're Ed Sheeran, and you're either trying to make it or you have made it. So it's either a hobby or you're a millionaire kind of thing. And actually the reality is it's a job. It's a normal living for hundreds and thousands of people. And every one of us, as I have said so many times, I'm actually worried about repeating myself now, but every one of us is, for all intents and purposes, a small business. I think what a lot of people might not understand is that the same person who plays, you know, background music for their office work party might be on stage with Ed Sheeran the next day. Yeah. You know, that freelancing means you do anything and everything to pay your bills. And, you know, that's why the sort of 1.57 billion that went towards, you know, keeping the big institutions and the big buildings mothballed doesn't actually help those who work within the industry. Yeah. You know, because keeping the Albert Hall doesn't employ people other than the people who work in that specific building. It doesn't employ any of the people who perform there. Even if you do, say, regularly tour with a fairly big artist, and that stuff would probably still be okay. That there's you know, that's probably only a few months' work a year. Yeah. You know, and if you are a freelance person, so many times I've been, you know, rung up and said, will you be able to, you know, do a gig, someone's pulled out, you know, in 2 days' time in the south of France or whatever, and you go, oh, yes, I'd love to, thank you. You know, but that just won't be possible now, as it stands, you know. It's stuff like that. As a freelancer, you have to be so flexible and so ready for anything. And so all these blocks that we now have in the way just start to make it seem more and more impossible for us to get back to any kind of normal.
Yeah, as if it wasn't hard enough already, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
And like, obviously, with the disease, you can't know what's going to happen exactly. But our government particularly seems to change its minds a lot.
Definitely.
At the last minute. And that means that promoters are getting more and more and more afraid of even attempting to rebook anything.
Yeah,
so true. And just that kind of, and also the kind of consistent, you know, letdown and the kind of fallout. I mean, actually, there was one other thing as Jess was talking, it reminds me that in addition to some of the things we've talked about with the EU situation, there's one really important thing, which is that they now have placed these restrictions on truckers, you know, on truckloads of the cabotage. So now, instead of, usually a truck that would be taking, you know, for example, equipment to set up on the stages, you know, obviously tours have these trucks that tour with all the equipment. So what's happened is they have placed this restriction, which is in place as of today, you know, that is happening right now, that trucks over 3.5 tons are limited to just 3 internal movements, which basically means that they could only drop a load off in, say, Paris, pick a load up in Paris, then take it to Lyon, then come home. So you can imagine, like,
that's a nightmare.
Haulage companies, what a nightmare. And actually, a really interesting fact is an estimated 85% of the European concert trucking business is based from the UK.
So that really?
Is potentially a devastating loss. Yet again, another fantastic percentage there of how much business in the UK is done in this area. And, you know, there's a great guy called Richard Burnett, who's the CEO of the Road Haulage Association. And he recently kind of brought this to light in an article, you know, where he said, you know, what are we, you know, if this doesn't change, then even from a logistical point of view, touring is just not, how on earth can we make that happen?
Yeah.
You know.
That's such an interesting point, because I hadn't heard that. And it's just another example of how just interlinked every different element can be in just infecting one big industry. So obviously the music industry is huge in itself, and so is the touring, just that one part of it. But then, like you say, there are all these different companies and different businesses and different industries that come together within that. And so if the trucking industry is affected, then that's going to have like a domino effect. And it's just, you just think, well, if that's one example, how many more are there that will be affected by this new legislation that we don't yet understand the full impact of? And it's just, it's devastating really when you think about it in terms of just how big it is, and how little we understand at this point, I think.
So true, yeah.
I was speaking to Keith Ames from the MU earlier today, and he was sort of saying, basically he was saying that our status as cultural ambassadors in the creative and cultural industries is massively at risk, and therefore also the status of the UK as you know, an artistic place in the world stage, as it were, is really, really, really at risk in this current situation, because we're just cutting off so many options. Cutting them off at the knees, really. And you know, we could be emerging after this pandemic as, you know, as a vibrant cultural place where people can come to all our festivals and all our amazing bands can tour in Europe and vice versa, and we can invite people back and we can be part of a big resurgence. And it's just like putting a plug on that so that the water can't start flowing again. And so, ironically, when talking about the way the government see us, when they talk about UK art and music and the cultural impact of our, you know, our culture in general has always been one of its biggest strengths.
It'd be such a shame to lose that.
You know, you think of the Beatles touring Hamburg, and I know obviously that was pre-EU.
No, that's actually the first thing that popped into my head. It's really funny you said that's the first thing that popped into my head.
Totally. But, you know, so many brilliant UK bands actually found their audiences in Europe before they found them in England.
They did.
You know, like Lizzie was saying, that grassroots way, and there's all this stuff, intricate, beautiful stuff that happens that just makes amazing artists appear, and we're just cutting that off at the source, really.
Yeah,
as a possibility.
So you know, as Jess was talking, was also if we think about it the other way around. So for those coming from the EU into the UK.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That already has, you know, they've already got this they can only do three routes. So basically, I think there's a thing called a certificate of sponsorship. Then there's the permitted paid engagement. Then there's a thing called permit-free festivals. But having had a little Google, because funnily enough, that's the only information I can find on any of this. The reciprocal way around, as we know, we don't know any information about how we will be touring the EU. But for anyone coming in from the EU, it's pretty lengthy and it's pretty costly looking at it, you know, just briefly online on Gov UK. And oh, that makes my heart sink, because, you know, we all have such incredible colleagues that we work with all around the world that, you know, we want everyone to be able to come in. So again, as Jess said, the kind of cultural hot pot that we are, you know, is very much because we have been so open to all kinds of cultures coming in and being, you know, free to do that without the kind of bureaucracy restricting them. And it would be such a shame to lose that.
Definitely. Oh, I completely agree. And it's just heartbreaking to think more and more about it as you start delving into all the different elements, all the different people that could be affected, the things we could lose as well, you know, up until now taken for granted, perhaps, you know, and just potentially shutting ourselves off and becoming really isolated culturally is not the way forward. That is not progression. And that is tragic to think that's where we're heading, really. Guys, thank you so much for joining me. We could talk about this for hours. There's so much to unpack here, and I'm sure that more and more is only going to come up as the months go on, as we start settling into this new routine. But I want to thank you both so much for giving us your insight today on how firsthand it will affect you both and how it could be, where we could be heading in the future. So thank you, and I wish you both the best of luck in the EU and in here in the coming years.
Thank you so much, Liv.
I'd like to say a huge thank you once again to Lizzie and Jess for such a wonderful conversation that really brought up so much to do with Brexit and the arts and really just the situation that we're heading for at the moment. So thank you once again to them. And if you'd like to get involved with anything more that they are doing in terms of Let Music Live, all you have to do is search Let Music Live in Facebook, in Instagram or whatever, and it should come up with all the work that they are doing. So thank you once again to those two. Okay, so we've looked at how the music industry is impacted by politics. Things as direct as legislation and policies can have a huge impact, as we've seen, on the landscape of the music industry, on where we could be heading now with Brexit. But I also want to look at how music is a reaction to politics. I really believe that there is no better reflection on society today than by looking at the arts coming out alongside that. You know, that could be films, it could be television, it could be paintings and stuff, but it's also included in music. A lot of people tend to just enjoy the music, enjoy the sounds of it, and there is absolutely nothing wrong with that. But I think there's so much that we can learn and hear from the lyrics of so many songs and so many artists that are trying to use this platform to speak about something. And this is going to come out more and more as the episodes go on, as we talk about things like gender and sexuality, mental health, and all the rest of it. But today we're still sticking with the theme of politics, and so the playlist that we've got this week is quite broad. You know, music covers a lot, and when you think about politically charged lyrics, you might think of genres like punk, and that is still relevant today, as relevant as it was back in the 80s with the likes of The Clash. There's a lot of really vocal young artists that are coming out at the minute that are using this platform for exactly what I've just said. One such example is the duo Goat Girl. And I've included their song Scum on this week's playlist because it's quite topical in what we've just discussed. It addresses the theme of Brexit and the outrage felt by a lot of the population about how it's been managed, about what's come out in the process of that. But there's also a lot of other genres that cover the themes of war, the themes of the refugee crisis. Quite a few songs in this playlist will address that. Myella by Nick Mulvey, or Graves by Churches. Two beautiful songs, quite different in how they sound, but you know, just another example of using their lyrics. And there are so many more like this. I've only included a small sample, and there's obviously so much more that can be found out there. But I hope that you'll enjoy this mix. I hope that maybe you'll find a few artists you didn't know before, and I hope that you'll listen to the lyrics properly, because in these examples, the lyrics are really trying to say something. They're trying to make you hear what the artist is trying to say. Next time, I will be talking about race and the music industry. This is such a huge topic, and we could go into so much detail about loads of different things that have gone back generations, you know, all these different issues, and it's a shame that I can only talk about such a little part of it. But I will be joined by Mark Anthony. He's the owner of Digital Jukebox Records, which is a Black-led record label. He's going to be talking to me about diversity in the music industry, the suppression of many Black artists, and how we can elevate this. How can we improve diversity in executive roles and help young Black professionals to cross these barriers?
This is corporate and mental suppression of the Black race. The white British people want what we have, but not want to pay for what they have taken.
Like I said, that will be on next time on The Here and Now. I hope you've enjoyed this podcast. Thank you so much for listening in. If you enjoyed it, feel free to subscribe on Spotify. Or if you know somebody else that might enjoy the themes that we've discussed today, tell a friend, you know, copy the link, shoot it over. It would really help me out. And I would so much appreciate to hear what you thought of this as well. You can find me on Twitter at Liv Cowell, or you can find this podcast on Instagram at The Here and Now Pod. And everything will be up there to keep you updated. Thank you so much once again. We'll see you next time.